WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports. Yes, the time has come once again. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, December 3rd, 2013. Hope you all are having a great start to your week. We are back at it once again with a ton to talk about, as this one is one of the weeks. This week right here, it's got to be one of the most talked about weeks in mid-Michigan sports history. I mean, the Michigan State men's soccer team are in the Elite Eight, folks. I'll be chatting with goalkeeper Zach Bennett in a few about the incredible ride that his team is on. Then you look at the MSU football team. They are prepping this week for the Big Ten Championship Showdown in Indy against Ohio State. And as we speak, actually, of course, it's Tuesday, and Mark D'Antonio is holding his weekly presser, and it is one packed presser, to say the least, folks. Mark D'Antonio, he addressed the media at 11 a.m., and you have 11 players, I kid you not, 11 players on the podium. No one-on-one interviews this week on the podium right now. Max Bulla is talking right now. You got Connor Cook, Blake Treadwell, Fool Finotti, Danikos Allen, Jeremy Langford, Benny Fowler, Shalik Calhoun, Darquez Denard, Mike Sadler, and Isaiah Lewis. I just ran out of breath saying all of those names. All of those players are doing podium-only interviews. That's got to be the longest presser in the history of pressers at Michigan State history. That's unbelievable. It started at 11 a.m. It's still going on as we speak. They have 11 players that will be hitting the podium right now. Oh, man, I'm glad I'm sitting right here talking to you guys, okay? That's a long presser. I think I would fall asleep by the time they got to about the fifth player, but that is crazy stuff. But, yeah, the MSU football team, they're prepping for that incredible MSU-OSU matchup this Saturday in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium, the Big Ten Championship game. So you got that. You got soccer team in the Elite Eight, MSU football. And then at the Breslin Center tomorrow night, the MSU men's basketball team, they welcome North Carolina to the Breslin Center. Can you believe that? I mean, so much going on this week. I mean, you got to be excited if you are a Spartan fan. I mean, you got to have a huge smile on your face right now, okay? We'll dive into all of that and so much more on today's show. It's also Top 5 Tuesday, and on today's edition, we will list the top 5 moments of the Spartan football season. Yes, the top 5 moments, our top 5 moments, at least Matt and I's moments, of the Spartan football season, and you don't want to miss that, and we are encouraging all of you to call in and share your favorite moment of this year's Spartan football season. It was certainly an incredible one. They go undefeated in the Big Ten Conference for the first time in school history. And, you know, one incredible, incredible ride they've been on. And I always tell folks, if you had told me this team will be competing for a Big Ten championship on December, the week of December 2nd, I would have said you're crazy. And now they are. They shut a lot of the doubters up with their incredible play, and now they're in position to really make history here. Of course, another 11-win season for them. I mean, incredible season. We want you to call in and share your favorite moment of this year's MSU football season. So far, of course, the ride isn't over. The ride is certainly not over. They could be smelling roses in Pasadena. So, but as of right now in the regular season, call in and share your favorite moment. Give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, that number is 517-355-9527. We would love to hear your thoughts on that and share your favorite moment. I'll also have to remind you guys that Current Sports TV is back at it this week, folks. Yes, Current Sports TV returns this week. You can be in the TV studio audience when my guest on Current Sports is East Lansing boys basketball coach and friend of the show. He's been on the radio show here countless times, Steve Fenimore. That's right, Steve Fenimore is entering his fourth season at East Lansing High School, where his record includes one regular season championship. Recording takes place 6:30 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, at WKAR Studios on the MSU campus. Seats are totally free. This is a totally free event, like we do it every week on Current Sports TV. But reservations are strongly recommended because, folks, hey, seating is limited, okay? That's Current Sports with guest Steve Fenimore and I Reserve your free seats to be in the TV audience. Visit WKAR.org. Okay, do it now, folks. Do it now. All right, well, let's hop into the show. Here are your current sports headliners on this December 3rd, 2013. All right, the Washington Nationals, they acquired pitcher, former Detroit Tigers pitcher, Doug Fister in a Monday night trade. In exchange, the Nets sent infielder Steve Lombardozzi, left-hander Ian Kroll, and minor league lefty Robbie Ray to the Tigers. Now, Fister is 29 years old. He went 14-9 with a 3.67 ERA in 33 games last year. In his third season with the Tigers, Fister was tied for the American League lead in getting batters to ground into double plays. He also allowed 0.6 home runs per nine innings, the second best in the American League, and they let him go. The 6'8" Fister fared well in the postseason, even when he was hit in the head. If you remember that, on a line drive in Game 2 of the 2012 World Series against San Francisco, and took a shutout bid into the seventh inning in what ended up being a 2-0 loss to the Giants. Over three postseasons with the Tigers, he had a 2.98 ERA in seven starts and a relief appearance. Now, Tigers GM Dave Dombrowski said the Tigers would move Drew Smyly into the rotation in place of Fister, who will likely replace Dan Heron in the Nets rotation and join Steven Strasburg, Jordan Zimmerman, and Gio Gonzalez. Now, the Tigers figure to save about $6 million by trading Fister, who was arbitration eligible and projected to earn about $7 million. But Dombrowski said the trade was not done to save money in hopes of keeping Max Scherzer beyond next season. So that's our current sports question of the day. Is trading Doug Fister the right move for the Detroit Tigers? We're going to discuss this in just a second, but we want you to call in and give your thoughts on it. Is trading Doug Fister the right move for the Detroit Tigers as they move forward now? Give us a call. Pick up that phone and express your opinion on it. 517-355-9527. Let your voice be heard, because there's certainly a buzz about that. And I'll tell you what, the Twitterverse blew up. At least my timeline blew up last night once this news was released about Fister leaving. So again, give us a call, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, the 2013 All Big Ten coaches and media teams were announced Monday, and several Spartans made the cut. Unsurprisingly, the Spartan Dogs were well represented for the first teams, with Shalique Calhoun, Max Bulla, Darquez Dennard, Isaiah Lewis, and Curtis Drummond as all first team selections by the coaches. Calhoun, Bulla, and Dennard were also selected as first teamers by the media. So, I mean, come on, folks. This is the best defense in the nation. We know that. No surprise here. Denikos Allen was a second-team selection for both the coaches and media, while Curtis Drummond and Mike Sadler joined him on the media team. Now, the Spartan offense pulled its weight as well, getting second-team coaches selections for Connor Cook. How about that? That was surprising to me. And Blake Treadwell, while Treadwell and Jack Allen were selected to the media's second team. Calhoun took home the Smith-Brown defensive lineman of the year. Of course, Smith, you remember Bubba Smith. He also played the same position as Shalique Calhoun. That's a pretty cool honor there. The Smith-Brown defensive lineman of the year award, while Denard earned the Tatum Woodson Defensive Back of the Year honor. Congrats to them. Great stuff there. Now, Ohio State, the other half of the Big Ten championship game, is also well represented, with Braxton Miller, Carlos Hyde, three offensive linemen, and three defensive players garnering first-team All-Big Ten media selections. Now, Miller, Hyde, Corey Linsley, Ryan Shazer, and Bradley Roby also cracked the coach's first team. So both Ohio State and MSU well represented in the All Big Ten teams. All right, upon further review, Ohio State's Marcus Hall and Dontre Wilson will be on the field Saturday night in Indianapolis. If you remember during that Michigan and Ohio State game, those two players, along with a plethora of players, I should say, were involved in a brawl. A brawl broke out, folks. If you remember, Wilson on the kick return, If you look at that moment, if you look at the moment, I cannot blame the whole incident that took place, because you're crowding the kick returner. What do you expect the guy to do? But you know what? I think this move was a move to just say, hey, you know, we kind of shove it under the rug and let's move on. I think some players should be suspended. That's just my opinion. I mean, there were birds being flipped left and right. But hey, the Big Ten reviewed the tape from the second quarter fight, and they ruled no additional punishment was necessary. Now, Hall, a starting right guard, and Wilson, a freshman who was averaging 25.2 yards per kickoff return, will be available when the Buckeyes face MSU in the Big Ten championship game. Michigan's Royce Jenkins-Stone was also ejected following the whole fiasco that ensued. This is a statement from the Big Ten on this. Quote, "The conference reviewed video of the incident that took place during the second quarter of the game and has concluded that the officials managed the situation properly and ejected the correct players for their actions. Now, the NCAA football playing rules provide that these players were to be disqualified for the remainder of the game since their ejections for fighting occurred during the first half of the contest. The officials and coaching staffs from both institutions did a good job of containing the situation once it started. As bad as it was, we are fortunate the incident did not escalate any further. More can and should be done by both coaching staffs in the future to prevent similar incidents from detracting from this rivalry." That's a direct statement from the Big Ten on that Michigan and Ohio State brawl. Ohio State coach Urban Meyer said Sunday that he had addressed the incident with all of the players involved and would rely on the Big Ten for any further punishment. Ohio State wants to be at full strength, folks, and Big Ten, hey, they want to see a good game. So that's my opinion on the whole situation. Again, if you want to express your thoughts on that, give us a call, 517-355-9527. All right, Washington head coach Steve Sarkisian is heading back to Cali, folks. The former USC co-offensive coordinator has been hired to replace Lane Kiffin as the head coach of the Trojans. Now, Steve, who coached Washington to a 34-29 record through five seasons, before that he served under Pete Carroll for seven seasons at USC, even splitting offensive coordinator duties with Kiffin. Now, this is a director. This is from USC athletic director Pat Hayden. He said, quote, "We are delighted to welcome Steve back to the Trojan family. We conducted a very exhaustive and thorough search, pinpointing about 20 candidates and interviewing five of them. We kept coming back to Sark, and he is the only one who was offered the job. I believe in my gut and that he is the right coach for USC at this time." Now, the odd man out is interim coach Ed Orgerian, who filed in for Kiffin and led USC to a 6-2 mark after a rough start, causing some to push for him and get the job full time. Now, he resigned, telling USC officials he was looking into other opportunities. Now, after the successful run, he should have plenty of job offers. So, Ed, I'm sure many are knocking on his door. All right, Lansing United. The city of East Lansing announced today that Lansing United will play the home portion of its 2014 inaugural season at the 700-seat East Lansing Soccer Complex on 3700 Coleman Road. I actually used to live near the club's apartments over there when I was in college. Now, this is from Lansing United president and CEO Jeremy Sampson, who, of course, is on Current Sports. Quote, "Having a home complex with two fields gives us flexibility to play our games both at night and during the day. The East Lansing Soccer Complex is a fantastic facility that our fans will love, and I envision us having a true home field advantage every time we take the pitch." Now, Lansing United is a new expansion team of the National Premier Soccer League. Teams within the league are professionally operated and are comprised of players holding amateur playing status, including high school, collegiate, and former professional athletes. The teams serve as a showcase for players striving to go pro. So the home portion, again, of Lansing United's 2014 schedule will include seven games against NPSL opponents from the Midwest Division's Great Lakes Conference. And, of course, to restate it for you guys who missed out on at the beginning portion of this, East Lansing Soccer Complex, they will be the home venue for Lansing United. East Lansing Soccer Complex, that's on 3700 Coleman Road. All right, those still publicly committed to David Akers, We talked about this on the show yesterday. David Akers, he hasn't been great this season for the Lions, let's be honest. The Detroit Lions are exploring their options at kicker. Now, Akers, who has struggled this season, has missed three field goals, including a 31-yarder versus the Packers on Thanksgiving. He also had two kicks blocked. Now, the short list of kicking candidates include 18-year-old veteran Orlando Mayer, former UCLA kicker Justin Metlock, and Norwegian YouTube sensation, yes, Harvard Kickalicious Rugland. I kid you not. I didn't think Kickalicious was on that list. When I looked at the list yesterday, he was not on that list, but they decided to invite him. Now, Rugland, who was on the team in training camp, was beat out by Akers despite being perfect in preseason action. No word on whether Rugland kicked a ball over the Ambassador Bridge from a moving ship, but he certainly has the fan vote, okay? Kickalicious certainly has one hell of a leg on him. You can look at his YouTube video, and I tell you, it's got so many hits, it's ridiculous, all right? Monday Night Football, Russell Wilson. He was unbelievable last night, folks. For those of you that tuned into MNF last night, Russell Wilson threw for 310 yards, three touchdowns. He was great, and the Seahawks became the first team to clinch a spot in the NFC playoffs with a 34-7 win over the New Orleans Saints. Now, Wilson completed 22 of 30 passes and finished with a quarterback rating off the charts, 139.6. He has 22 regular season wins in his first two seasons, tied for the most by a second-year QB, and is 14-0 at home. Now, more important than wrapping up a spot in the postseason, the Seahawks are 11-1. They move two games ahead of the rest of the NFC in the race for home field advantage and hold the tiebreakers over New Orleans and Carolina, the two closest pursuers. They're actually the 12th man over there in Seattle. They actually broke the world record, the Guinness World Record, for the loudest stadium in football. They broke it last night, so having that home field advantage is certainly huge when you talk about the Seattle Seahawks. Unbelievable stuff there. Now, Wilson averaged 10.3 yards per pass attempt, while Drew Brees was at 3.9. New Orleans was 25th in the NFL in run defense, but held Marshawn Lynch to 45 yards rushing on 16 carries. And this is a sad, sad story. I couldn't believe when I read it today, but a woman has been charged with killing a fellow Alabama fan after the end of last weekend's Iron Bowl football game. She was actually angry that the victim and others didn't seem upset over the Crimson Tide's loss to Auburn. And this is a direct quote from the sister of the slain woman. That's what she told reporters. Now, Adrian LaRose Brisky, that's her name. She's 28 years old. She was charged Monday with murder in the killing of 36-year-old Michelle Shepherd. Now, Hoover Police Captain Jim Coulker, he said both Birmingham women were Alabama fans and at the same party for the annual game between the interstate rivals. Now, with no time left on the clock, Auburn, of course, they returned a missed Crimson Tide field goal, more than 100 yards. Chris Davis took it to the house. Now, the victim's sister, Nakisha Shepherd, she said she witnessed the killing, and had no doubt it was about football, even though it was unclear to investigators whether the violence was motivated by the game. Now, Shepherd said Brisky flew into a rage when she saw that the sisters and others were joking that the Crimson Tide's loss wasn't as bad as if the NBA's Miami Heat had lost a game, which I totally don't agree with on that aspect. But this is from Shepherd. She told the AP this, quote, "She said we weren't real Alabama fans because it didn't bother us that they had lost. And then she started shooting." She's crazy. She's nuts. Shepherd said she and her sisters were invited to the party by a mutual friend who also invited Brisky, and about two dozen people were on hand. Shepherd, the mother of three, was shot to death in the parking lot of an apartment complex in the Birmingham suburb of Hoover, and the women did not know each other before the party. Shepherd said, to close this thing out, quote, "It was over a football game. I'm never going to forget it because she died in my arms." We got some sick people in this world. Sometimes, guys, you take rivalries a little too serious, okay? A little too serious. That's sad stuff there. Well, Those are your current sports headliners on this December 3rd, 2013. If you want to comment on any of those, you know that you can give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Also, today's Top 5 Tuesday is focused on MSU football. We are giving you our top 5 moments from the MSU football season. Such an incredible ride for this MSU football team, and it is not over, folks. Give us a call and give us your list or share your favorite moment of the season. 517-355-9527. All right, in the meantime, while you all are calling in, you can also call about this because this was the big news. This is the big news in the land of Michigan. It concerns the Detroit Tigers as the Washington Nationals. They acquired pitcher Doug Fister in a Monday night trade. In exchange, the Nets sent infielder Steve Lombardozzi, left-hander Ian Kroll, and minor league lefty Robbie Ray to the Tigers. Matt Luetke now joins me as we dive into this topic and kind of debate on whether or not this was the right move for the Detroit Tigers. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well. I'm still trying to get over that Alabama story, though.
Isn't that crazy? I mean,
that's
going way too far. First of all, that woman's crazy for taking out a gun in any venue or atmosphere like that. And then she has the audacity to get upset that they're not taking the loss as personal as she's taking it and decides to start shooting. She's got some mental issues, man. That's got to be the ultimate rivalry story. I've never heard anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, the SEC can bash the Big Ten all they want for not winning a national title, or, you know, everybody else for not winning a national title in the last six or seven. Yeah, you can have six straight national titles. We'll take fans that don't kill each other if their team loses. That is
That's just
easily one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
Isn't it that crazy? The lady starts just starts. Oh, you're not. And she, you know, the quote that really got me when she talks about her homegirls who were there with her at the party, and they say, oh, well, this win isn't as bad as a Miami Heat loss. And that's what set her off. That's what enraged her, and she starts shooting. Like, what? Are you kidding me? Which I totally agree with that. I mean, it's Miami Heat. That's totally different than, you know, an Auburn and Alabama. That's huge.
Right.
But you don't take out a gun and
but
start.
It's not worth starting to fire some rounds at people.
That's nuts. That lady needs mental health.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Maybe stop watching sports.
Right. Please just stop. Just stop because you obviously can't handle it.
That's the wrong
kind of
fan.
She doesn't need a gun. Yeah. Anytime you start, you know, popping off.
Ooh.
Off of something crazy like that. That's nuts. That's a crazy story. I couldn't believe that either, man. Ooh. But okay, all right, back to the Tigers, though.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on, when you heard this news last night, Matt, what are your thoughts on Fister being traded to the Washington Nationals?
I will certainly miss Doug Fister. He was extremely reliable in the playoffs. You know, he was a nice piece of the rotation, but at the same time, if you can trade your fourth starter and get three quality players back, I think it's a no-brainer. They save money. They get three young players. I mean, they're 25, 22, and 22. So you're going to get future assets for a guy who wasn't really one of the gems of your rotation anyway. We get to move Smiley out of the bullpen. I think people are going to be happy about that. We plug Kroll right into the bullpen, and he's an effective left-hander. He pitched well for Washington last year. So I think they just kind of revamp the staff a little bit, update things. You get a little more flexibility if you want to make that Scherzer deal. I think they're just looking to kind of cut ties with some of the bigger salaries, move forward, you know, turn the page on the Leland era and start building some younger talent up so that we don't have these, you know, these top-heavy rosters where if guys aren't performing, we don't have the depth to kind of fill it out.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, when y'all looked at this move, you know, one phrase came to mind. It's all about the Benjamins, baby. It was all about Moolah, I think, when you talk about this move. Because now, I mean, what they have about $6.5 million in salary to work with now. But I don't know, Matt, if the risk is greater than the reward when I look at this. Because if you look at Fister, he finished with a 14-9 record, a 3.67 ERA, 15 doubles, 2 home runs. Comparing that to the three players that are, you know, now coming to the roster for the Detroit Tigers, Lombardozzi, this is what he hit his last three seasons, 259, 278, and 338, 15 doubles, 2 home runs, and 307 plate appearances. Robbie Ray, minor league player. Remember, he's playing in the minors. He's a minor league player with a combined 11-5 record and a 3.36 ERA, and that's in 27 starts. And Kroll, he appeared in 32 games last season, logging 27 1/3 innings, allowing 3.71 ERA. So if you look at that and compare him to Fister's, now Fister, I really did some digging on this last night, Matt, just to make sure I knew my stuff here. Fister is one of the top 10 to 20 pitchers in the MLB over the past three seasons. When you talk about several categories here, Matt, if you look at it, according to Fangraphs.com, and at Fangraphs, it's a pretty good site. I like Fangraphs. They really go in depth here. Fangraphs.com, Fister ranks 9th in wins above replacement percentage over the past three seasons. He ranks 20th in ERA and 10th in base on balls rate, and also has the 4th lowest home run baseball rate in the past three seasons. When I look at those numbers, and I look at those, and like I said, I equate them to the stats that Lombardozzi, Ray, and Kroll have. I don't know, Matt. I don't know if the, like I said, I don't know if the risk is better than the reward here. And because simply because you talk about a minor league player, we don't know how good he's going to be in Robbie Ray. Kroll and Lombardozzi, looking at their numbers, they seem to be average players at best. Maybe Dombrowski knows something. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of them because when those names popped out in the trade, I'm sitting there like, neither one of those names equate to anything that Fister gave to this team. I don't know.
Okay, I can see that. And usually this is what happens when you trade an established player for three guys that nobody's really ever heard of. And it certainly doesn't help that the Nationals are in the NL, so Tigers fans didn't really get a good look at the Nationals this year. But Doug Fister can only play in one out of every five games. He's only going to take the mound once every 5 days. You're trading your fourth best starter so you can get a young arm in the bullpen, which I think everyone and their mother can agree was the biggest problem with the Tigers last season.
But I tell you what, even though he's the fourth best starter, on that Tigers team, every starter was great.
Oh, yeah, and that's true.
He'd probably be the
best
starter on any team.
But that's what I'm saying. If he's your fourth best, does he really have that much value to your team other than a young left-handed reliever and a switch-hitting utility guy and a top prospect?
I don't know.
I think maybe this season, I think you're right. They're losing a little in the short term. But when you have a rotation that's as strong as the Tigers have, you can afford to kind of deal one of your four, you know, aces tentatively. I mean, you still have JV, you still have Scherzer, you still have Sanchez. Now you got Smiley moving in. It's not like they're hurting for starting pitching, but they were hurting for bullpen help, and they were definitely hurting for someone with some speed, someone who can field multiple positions, someone who's a switch hitter. That'll be nice. It's not just V-Mart anymore. It's good to make other teams have to adjust to your lineup. I think Lombardozzi does that just because he's so versatile. I mean, Ray is just kind of icing. If he turns out to be the player that some people think he's going to be, the Tigers win this trade in 3 years.
That's what I'm saying. He's been playing minor league, you know, these past few seasons. I haven't seen – I just don't know if Fister – trading Fister for so little – I don't know how – I don't know about Lombardozzi and Ray. We got to see about Ray. Like I say, coming from the minor leagues. Kroll, looking at their numbers, looking at Kroll and Lombardozzi's numbers, they're average numbers. There's nothing that really pops out to me that says, oh, my God, this guy's going to be a star. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think this move may possibly end up biting the Tigers in the butt, and because I don't think the return is that great when you talk about giving up a player like Fister. Because I thought Fister was solid, especially in the playoffs.
Oh, he was very
solid.
Fister
was great in the playoffs.
He was very solid. I like Fister a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's going to do well for Washington, too. But, I mean, you look at Kroll, there's your left-hander who has 22 strikeouts in 27 and a third innings.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of drift back to the Boston series. What if we have somebody like that in the bullpen waiting to take on Big Poppy, you know? And it's just, I think they're just planning for those kind of situations. They want to have a more well-rounded team and not just such a starter-dominant team. I think they need to address the bullpen. They're working that in that direction. And yeah, losing Pfister is terrible because he was a solid, like I said, solid option.
And that's why I said I think this move more so when you bring up Scherzer now. I mean, now with that $6.5 million, that could possibly a little bit of that can go in the pocket of Max Scherzer now.
Every little bit counts.
To keep him, because Max Scherzer he was the best pitcher in the baseball last year. You know what I mean? So keeping him, that definitely was why this move was made. I think it was made more financially. Then it was more of a financial move than it was a production move as far as what happens out there on the field.
Right. So. Yeah, I can see that. Short term, I think they take a little step back, but long term, I think it has a chance to be a really nice deal for the Tigers.
We'll see. I hope they turn out to be good players, man. Because like if you look at some of the reports about Roby Ray and the Myers, I mean, he seems to be
he's number five.
Yeah, yeah.
The number five prospect according to Baseball America. So
yeah, he seems to be a solid player. So. Yeah. Yeah. All right. If you want to comment and give your thoughts on is trading Doug Pfister the right move for the Tigers, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Zach Bennett. ZB is in the house, folks. Goalkeeper of the MSU men's soccer team. They are in the Elite Eight. Yes, the Elite Eight, folks. Exciting stuff. Don't go anywhere. He joins me next. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. For those of you who have been living under a rock these past few days, okay, the MSU men's soccer team has done something that has not been done in 45 years. I'm going to say it again. The MSU men's soccer team has done something, folks, that hasn't been done in 45 years. 45 years ago, I wasn't even thought of, okay? They are in the Elite Eight. Unbelievable stuff, a feat that hasn't been accomplished. If you do the math, that's 1968, folks, 1968. And today I welcome a man who helped make that all possible. Goalkeeper, Zach Bennett, sophomore goalkeeper, Zach Bennett. Zach, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Now, you guys, a record-tying 13th shutout of the season, 1-0 victory over Georgetown to advance this past weekend. Talk about that game and what went right for you guys, Zach.
It was a crazy game going out there to Georgetown. We knew it was going to be tough. They had two really high-powered forwards that we had to account for. But we had a good game plan, stuck to it, got a goal early, which was kind of nerve-wracking to hold them off for, I don't know, like 60, 70 minutes. But we held tough and got that shutout. The defense played great, especially in the second half. We were getting shelled, it felt like.
You know, you stole my next question. His defense for you guys have been unbelievable. I mean, you guys, I don't believe you guys have given up a goal this tournament, all tournament. You guys are the only team that's done that, right?
I don't know.
Out of the teams left.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're one.
I believe that's what Amy just told me.
Yeah, I think so.
Gosh, so that's unbelievable for you guys. And you being the goalkeeper, I mean, defense is what you do, Zach. I mean, I got to ask you, coming from a goalkeeper's perspective, throughout that game, especially when you guys score early, you're like, okay, I got to do my job now, possibly get a shutout. Let's go to Elite Eight, baby. That's got to be a lot of pressure on your shoulders. Zach, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, we always try to build the team with defense. I mean, from the forwards all the way back to me. And we tell the offense, you know, give us one goal, and I think we got a shot to win the game. You know, I think we got a shot to shut out any team in the country. So once they got that goal early, you know, it was up to us to shut them out the rest of the way. And, you know, the defense played amazing, a little nerve-wracking, but got it done.
For you guys, I mean, when you talk about the defense that the Spartan team plays with, I was talking to a colleague of mine yesterday and saying that the Spartans out of the teams left in the Elite Eight right now, you guys have the top defense. And looking at that dynamic of this MSU men's soccer team, I mean, what makes this defense so special?
Well, a lot of leadership, a lot of leaders back there. Our captain, the main dude on the team, Kevin Cope, you know, just awesome to play with. He's just one of our main leaders we got on the team. So it starts with him. Then you have the Keeners, the Fatais, Andrew Hers, Wes Curtis, Ryan Thalen, just everyone on the team, really, just we pride ourselves on the defense and that blue collar work ethic.
Gotcha. Definitely. Well, it's definitely paying off. I tell you that. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm sitting with sophomore goalkeeper of the MSU men's soccer team. ZB is what they call him. Zach Bennett. He's sitting here with me right now. And I tell you what now. You guys are in the Elite Eight. You guys have done something that hasn't been done, Zach, in 45 years. I mean, when you think about that and when this team thinks about that, what goes through your head?
It means a lot. I know it means a lot to the coaching staff. You know, Damon Rensing has done so much good things for this program. It started with Joe Baum, now it's with him. And we really are a family-based team, and a lot of tradition goes into that. So to bring our team to somewhere that hasn't been in 40-something years is very special and something that I feel very accomplished and sane and very proud of our team.
You know, Zach, we had Damon on the show, I believe last week, you know, talking about the run that you guys are currently on. You know, Damon seems like a real chill guy, just real laid back. Does he ever light you guys up sometimes? I can't picture that.
He's a very laid back coach, but you know he'll get into us every now and then.
He will. Has he thrown anything or slammed some chairs? Or?
Yeah, he's might have thrown a water cup or two out of frustration on the bench every now and then. But he usually keeps a calm and cool demeanor throughout everything, and I think that really helps us because I think what we do best is, you know, laid back, have fun kind of mentality, and that's what's got us here this far. So I don't think we need to change anything, and I think it starts with Damon.
What do you think makes Damon such a great coach?
I think it just goes back to that mentality. You know, he brought so much tradition. He played here, then he assistant coach, now he's the head coach. I think he just brings that tradition and really love for MSU soccer. I mean, he just truly bleeds green. And I think he really tries to incorporate that with our team and to get us to do the same, and it seems to be working out pretty well.
I tell you what, Zach, you guys being in the Elite Eight now, I mean, there are so many teams that, you know, wish they were in the position that you guys are in right now. The Elite Eight, only 8 teams left. I mean, that's got to be a lot of pressure, a lot of weight on this team. But at the same time, you guys, when you look at this season, you look at the history of this program, again, I go back to 45 years. This hasn't been done in 45 years. No matter what happens this weekend against Notre Dame, I mean, is it a disappointment if you guys lose, or how will you feel? If you guys lose, I don't like – it's a tough question for me to ask because you have to shift your mindset here. But, I mean, just talk about that aspect of it.
I was actually talking to my mom and dad last night, and I was saying that if you had told us at the beginning of the year we were going to make it to the Elite Eight, have a shot to go to the Final Four, I think everyone would just be so excited, just giddy with excitement. But now that you're here, you can only want more. Like, you're at the Elite Eight, now you're like, Final Four sounds pretty sweet. So you can only hope for more, but I think regardless of what happens on Sunday, hopefully we get that W. But I think regardless, it's a pretty big year for the program and pretty accomplished year.
Yeah, because you get a little greedy, right? I mean, once you get to this point, it's like, let's go all the way. We made it this far, we might as well go all the way, right?
Exactly. I mean, the Elite Eight sounds pretty sweet, but Final Four sounds that much sweeter.
Definitely. You know what, Zach, I got to ask you something because, you know, we were talking at the beginning of this show about how, I mean, this week – and when you talk about Michigan State sports and Michigan sports in general, you talk about Michigan State particularly. I mean, you got so much going on. You got you guys in the Elite Eight. The MSU men's basketball team is competing against North Carolina at the Breslin Center tomorrow night. You look at the MSU football team. They travel to Indianapolis this Saturday to go play for the Big Ten Championship. I mean, if you're a Spartan, you got to be smiling from ear to ear right now. I mean, it's an unbelievable week for Spartan sports. Just talk about that and, you know, just the atmosphere around campus right now.
Yeah, it's special to be a part of. You know, you see all these, you keep up with Twitter, you know, what teams are doing what, you know, trying to keep up. And I think, you know, basketball being number one, football doing big things this year, field hockey making it to the Sweet 16. I think it's just, you see all these teams doing so well, and you just want to be a part of it and cheer them on. And it pushes you to do a little bit more, too. You want to get some of that spotlight, too. So, you know, basketball team's doing great. They're number one. Football team's doing great. But, you know, Michigan State soccer is trying to keep up with them.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to ask you, as you know, you talk about that spotlight. You around campus, I mean, you being the goalkeeper, you guys in the Elite Eight now. I mean, are you getting more attention now as you walk, going to class, and people congratulating you? What's that like?
I don't know if they're really recognizing me just yet. I mean, I'm no Gary Harris or anything like that, but definitely getting a lot of more notoriety through the social media, and the support has been unbelievable. through everything. Our fans have done just so. I mean, we had 200, I think, close to it at Georgetown, which is in D.C. So
right.
The support has been there. But as far as getting recognized on campus, I don't know if it's quite there.
It'll come. When the whole thing, I tell you, it's going to come,
but
right?
Definitely the people that we associate with the team, our friends, you know, who's been following us, they're definitely keeping up with it.
Great stuff, Zach. Now, you know, for you guys, I mean, now being, you know, in the Elite Eight, is it kind of hard? What does Damon do to kind of try to keep your guys' heads out of the clouds and keep you focused on the task at hand, the next task at hand?
Yeah, I probably got in trouble for saying Final Four, to be honest with you.
He doesn't like that.
Yeah. he wants us to keep the next game is the biggest game of the year. He's preached that from day one, and I think we've really taken it to heart. We have to keep one game at a time kind of mentality, because, you know, you get too far ahead, that's the easiest way to lose the current game. Mm-hmm. So I think we're really just focused on Notre Dame, trying to put the Final Four, last time I'll say it.
right, there you go, last time.
try to put that in the back of your mind, just try to focus all your attention on Notre Dame and this Saturday, getting that W.
Definitely. Now, bringing up Notre Dame, I mean, what do you guys know about Notre Dame? How are you guys preparing this week for that matchup?
They have a strong offense. They've had our number the past two or three times we play them. They knocked us out of the NCAA tournament last year, beat us in the regular season this year. So I think we just really got to focus on defense again. And the defense is really what we've preached. Defense wins championships. So I think if we play our best defensive game, I think we can get one or two in on them, and I think the defense can do the rest. And that's just not just the defensive line. That's the whole team. Mm-hmm. It starts with the forwards all the way back to me. That's the whole defensive mindset. It's just not just the back four and me.
Right, all defense, I'd say. And what type of team is Notre Dame?
They're very, very high-powered offense. They got one of the best forwards in the country, Ship. So we definitely need to account for them. Mm-hmm. They like to possess the ball. But it's nothing we haven't seen all year. We've played a really tough schedule. Played the Akrons, played the Marquettes, played now Georgetown, Louisville. So we've seen some pretty special players and have dealt with them pretty well. So I think we just got to take that experience from this season and go in at it with another big game, another chance to get another W and keep moving on in the tournament.
Zach, before I let you go, if you could choose one word to sum up this season, what would that word be and why, man? I know, that's a tough one. I love asking that question, man.
One word.
Yeah, one word to sum up this season. Toughy. Think about it.
I think tradition would probably be a pretty big word for what we've done this year. You know, we've brought the tradition of MSU soccer, and we've put a little bit of our flavor, I guess, on it this year with the whole laid-back, having-fun mentality. But I think we've really, deep down, it's still that old Michigan State soccer mentality that Damon played with and then assistant coach, and now he's the head coach. I think he's really brought that to this team.
Definitely. Hey, there you have it, folks. Zach Bennett, goalkeeper of the MSU men's soccer team. ZB. How'd you get that name, ZB? I mean, it's your initial, ZB. Everybody probably called you
that,
right?
It's actually my dad. My dad started that when I was like 4 years old playing soccer and all the sports. Didn't want to yell Zach, so I thought
ZB.
Quicker to say ZB, and it just stuck with me. And then I brought it to Michigan State because it just felt so weird. People were calling me Zach on the field. And so now pretty much everyone knows me as ZB.
There you go. ZB, Zach Bennett, goalkeeper, sophomore goalkeeper of the MSU men's soccer team. They play in the Elite Eight, Notre Dame, this Saturday, 7 p.m. Hey, ZB, good luck, brother, all right? Good luck, man.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll dive into our Top 5 Tuesday topic. Today, we're listing the top 5 moments of the Spartan football regular season. Call in, give us your list, or give us your favorite memory, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. We want to hear your favorite memories of the year. One incredible season for Sparty. It's so much going around in mid-Michigan. Unbelievable sports here for MSU. Keep it locked right here. Current Sports is coming right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Whoa, well, we had a packed show today. We just finished talking with, I just sat down with Zach Bennett. He is the MSU men's record-breaking goalkeeper. He's only a sophomore, folks. He is great. They are coming off a shutout win over Georgetown to move on to the Elite Eight, where they play Notre Dame this Saturday at 7 p.m. Of course, that same day, MSU football plays in the Big Ten football championship game against Ohio State. So much going on, and tomorrow you got MSU basketball. They take on highly acclaimed, when you talk about basketball, in college sports, North Carolina. Yes, UNC is taking a trip to the Breslin Center. Current Sports will be there. So much going on. But let's focus on the MSU football team right now. It's our Top 5 Tuesday segment as we list the top five moments, our top five moments of the Spartan football regular season. If you want to call in and share your thoughts, give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Hey, Matt, what's your list look like, man?
Oh, man, I really enjoyed making this list because it's been a really fun season to see how far they've come. All right, number five, and I got to admit, I kind of cheated because I threw a bunch of things in for each number. But
oh, did you? Okay.
I don't care. It's been a fun year. We've won 11 games. I'm going to stick with it. All right, number five, I have Jeremy Langford, the backbreaker. Jeremy Langford, the closer. Mm-hmm. Finishes three straight games with huge runs, huge touchdown runs, to more or less put the nail in the coffin. He scores a 40-yard touchdown against Michigan. He scores a 37-yard touchdown against Nebraska. And he scores a 37-yard touchdown against Northwestern. He also had a big run against Minnesota last week. Didn't go for six. Still, the guy has become that closer. He, you know, yes. Coming into the season, they didn't know who was going to play running back. Riley Bulla was the first teamer out of spring practice. Jeremy Langford comes out of nowhere. He's got 16 touchdowns on the year.
He's been great,
They don't miss Le'Veon.
Right, they don't. I mean, like I said, Jeremy Langford, he, as far as the offense goes, he has been the most consistent aspect to that MSU offense.
He's been fantastic all year, and gets stronger as the game goes on.
He does.
Those runs are evidence to that. He just breaks their spirit in the fourth quarter.
Right.
I love it. All right. Number four, Benny Fowler touchdown versus Northwestern.
Oh, 87-yard nice,
score.
It?
Connor Cook floats one up. Northwestern guy not looking at the ball.
Right.
Hits his back. Fowler kind of catches it one-handed. Turns around. Doesn't break stride running backwards.
No,
turns
he keeps going.
And scoots 87 yards.
Same speed running back. I think he had another crazy catch. I forget who it was against, though. I mean, in the end zone. Remember, he got bobbled with a hit. Hit a defender and bobbled into his hands.
Illinois.
Illinois game. He's had
some crazy catches for sure. But the Northwestern game, I feel like, is usually a snapshot of the year for both teams. Last year, you know, Michigan State leads, lose the game late. That was the story of the whole season. 2 years ago, they beat Northwestern late. Mm-hmm. That was the story of that season. They won close games that year. This year, they just blew them out. And that's been the story of this season. They've won every Big Ten game by 11 or more points. They're beating teams soundly. This was more evidence to that. Number three, take you back, Iowa City.
Okay.
Big Ten opener.
Yep.
6 minutes left in the second quarter. MSU has a 3-0 lead. And up to this point, they had not recorded an offensive play of 40 yards or more. And we were just waiting.
Yeah, I think we were still thinking that
this team was going to finish 7-5.
We had a bet here on the show, I think. Or that was one of our picks.
That was one of our picks. Will they get a play of over 40 yards?
Yeah.
We both said yes.
Alex was the only one who said
Alex
no.
Alex said no.
Right.
And what a shocker.
What a shocker.
Alex
has lost the last 2 months. But yeah, let's go. Let's proceed.
So Connor Cook steps back. They bring the blitz. He floats one over the middle to McGarrett Kings Jr.
Yep.
43-yard touchdown. Big play. It was the first big play of the year.
Yeah.
And that was one that kind of set the tone that this offense could improve, and you know, so far the last eight weeks or so, we've seen nothing but improvements from the offense, and it's been a sight to see. Tied with that one, number three, I'm going to say, hey, diddle diddle, Sadler up the middle.
Oh, that was beautiful, wasn't it? That was a great moment.
Fourth and seven, opening play of the fourth quarter,
yep.
Fake punt, 25 yards, first down.
Yep.
Kept the chains moving, kept Michigan State moving. They end up getting a field goal on the drive.
Love
they
it.
They win 26-14.
Do you think we're going to see a trick play this Saturday?
Absolutely.
I think we are, too. I went on Impact yesterday.
105%?
Yeah. I'm very, very sure today. We're going to see something clever. I think if it's a blowout, even if it's a blowout, I think it may be, you're going to see something. You're going to see something. I think there's a big chance that you're going to see something crazy with a clever name this Saturday.
Oh, yeah. And if you remember even back to the 2011 Big Ten Championship game.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second quarter of that game was incredible. But, I mean, they had the Keith Nichols sideline catch.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. Who can forget that? The flip. Oh, that was – how can you forget that?
Amazing. All right. But let's keep going.
Yeah.
So that's my number three. Number two, Nebraska, up 27-21. Nebraska's threatening. It is 3rd and 13 at the Nebraska 27. They bring an all-out blitz. Connor Cook, again, money on third downs, floats one over, hits Keith Mumphrey for a 27-yard score. Gives us some breathing room on the road.
Right.
And they needed it because Nebraska was in the hunt the whole game. The defense didn't play that well. You know, it was actually 3rd and 8, and Cook completed a pass to Fowler for about 12 yards and a first down, gets called back for an illegal man downfield penalty.
Yeah, remember that, yeah.
And that's one of the other big stories. They've been able to overcome mistakes.
It's not
like they're playing mistake-free
because,
football.
Because, I mean, if you look at, you know, many games this season, which has been something that has plagued them in many games, the penalties. They've had so many penalties. You look at and just shake your head and just say, what is going on here? But, you know, that defense has been great and saved, you know, a lot of drives, giving them another chance to make opportunities happen on the offense. And that's just another example of that.
Right. And they're able to overcome penalties even on the offense. That's a drive killer.
Right.
You know, a 5-yard penalty on 3rd and 8 after you get the first down.
Right.
9 times out of 10, that drive is done.
Yeah, 3rd and 13. I mean, come on, man.
But Connor Cook bounces back. He's got a short memory. Throws another strike to Mumphrey. Touchdown. Gives them the breathing room they needed.
Right.
And then number one. This is great. Maybe my favorite stretch of three plays ever. Ramon Taylor gets an interception for Michigan, brings it back to the MSU 41. This is the end of the third quarter. The game is still in doubt.
Right, right.
And it kind of looked like, oh boy.
Right, what's going on here?
This is where the tides turn in this game.
Yeah.
Devin Gardner comes out, decides to run left, circles back right, loses 5 yards, gets tackled by Calhoun and Lewis.
Yep.
2nd and 15. That play, Danico Salen comes through, sack, loss of 9. 3rd and 24, Michigan calls timeout, regroups, gets their ducks in a row. Doesn't matter, they get sacked again for a loss of 7. Ed Davis comes off the edge.
It was 4th and what?
4th and 31, sir.
Oh, my gosh.
Start the drive at the MSU 41, finish it at the U of M 38.
Crazy. That complete dominance. Complete dominance by that MSU defense. That's what that game was
all
about.
And after that, there was no doubt that Michigan State was going to roll.
Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt.
Awesome.
Great list. Great list there. Mine are more so, I have a few moments sprinkled in here. I don't have – yours are very specific. Great moments, though.
I've
loved
it. I've got specific moments.
Definitely. For me, I'm going to start at 5. You know, I want to give a hats off to Hank Bulla getting inducted into the MSU Hall of Fame. I mean, that was such a great moment. I mean, of course, the history, the long and rich history that now is still continuing. You got Riley Bulla still with this MSU football team, you know, with Max now leaving. But this Bulla family.
Byron down the pipe.
Yeah, Byron down the – I mean, it's just – it's like a factory, just a machine here. But Hank Bulla getting inducted to the Hall of Fame, I mean, that you know, seeing him on the field with Mo Pete, I mean, unbelievable moment there. So hats off to the Bulla family. Hats off to Hank Bulla. That was a great moment, I thought, and, you know, definitely well-deserved for the Bulla family, seeing Hank get inducted. For, you know, of course – Jeremy Langford. The emergence of Jeremy Langford has definitely been something that you look at and just, you know, if you're a Spartan fan, you got to smile, man, because, you know, you talked about it, Matt, coming into this season, you know, Le'Veon Bell being the workhorse that he was last season for this team, he was the MSU offense. You know, losing him to the NFL draft, he goes now and, you know, he's playing for Pittsburgh now, and you're sitting there saying, oh, okay, who's the guy? We didn't know who the guy was. Like you said, Riley Bulla was, you know, that's who everyone was talking about. But then Jeremy Langford comes out of nowhere, and he's been so consistent and so vital to the wins. And MSU really going undefeated, you know, they have to give a lot of – in the Big Ten season, they have to give a lot of credit to that, to Jeremy Langford, because he was their bailout when wide receivers weren't catching the football, when Connor Cook looked iffy. You could get a ball to Jeremy Langford, and he would get the job done. So hats off to Jeremy Langford. That's number four. Number three – for me, I want to bring up the MSU. It has to be the MSU quarterback controversy for me, because I feel as though this was a rallying point for this team to find out who they were. And I think ultimately it kind of brought them close together, to be honest with you. When many doubters were out there saying this MSU football team are done, they don't even have a quarterback, you know what I mean, to talk about here. And D'Antonio now has the pleasure. I talked about it yesterday. D'Antonio now has the pleasure of sitting back and saying, hey, I told you so now. Because that, I think that quarterback controversy was, in a way, it really added some flavor to this season. Because you look at, I think it added some flavor because if you look at this season and you say to yourself, MSU's going nowhere, then all of a sudden to see Cook emerge as the guy and to see them consistently get better from week to week to week, you know, that's something that, you know, you look at, you know, the struggles. Your struggles sometimes become your triumph. And I think that's the situation they had here with the whole controversy here now. And it's something that they looked at and they can say, hey, we told you so. So to me, I thought that was a moment that was caused a lot of controversy, to say the least. But it turned out to be something that this team can look at and say, hey, we overcame that. So number two, MSU, of course, beating Michigan. I mean, that was complete dominance. Complete dominance on the defense. You brought up three moments where, you know, it was 4th and 31. You know what I mean? Devin Gardner couldn't do anything. It was suffocating. And, you know, Spartan fans out there, me being an MSU alum, it was great to see that. So, unbelievable moment there. And for number one right now, the fact that MSU is even playing in the Big Ten Championship game. This moment right here, and possibly a chance to play in the Rose Bowl. This right here, this week for this MSU football team is, for me, the most memorable of all the season, because you look at how this MSU football team has progressed from the beginning of the season to now, and now they're playing to possibly, and you know, a moment that stands out to me was when Max Bullock took the podium after that MSU win over Michigan, and he said, "Hey, we want Ohio State. You know, we want to play the quote unquote best offense in the Big Ten, possibly the nation. We want a chance at them. We want our defense to go up against them." And now you have that opportunity this weekend to do it on a huge stage in Indy, Big Ten Championship. Let's go. So this moment right here for me, most memorable. I can't wait for it. Honorable mention, some type of way.
Okay.
I got to say that because that's so hilarious. Seeing Mark D'Antonio, you know, lip sync, whatever, to some type of way in the locker room and the dance battles in the locker room. If you saw that feature on The Journey, hilarious stuff there. Wide receivers stepping up and catching the football, because that was another question mark this season. And I think they figured it out to a degree. Keith Mumphrey, Benny Fowler, Tony Lippitt, those guys stepping up and catching the football. They've been great. Izzo talking to the student section during the rain delay during the South Florida game. That was hilarious. The student section, they wouldn't budge even when it was coming down, lightning coming down. And Tom Izzo gets on the mic. You have no idea what he's saying. He's just yelling at the entire mic. And he actually celebrated a touchdown in the student section with the crowd. I thought that was a really, really cool moment. So many cool moments this season for this MSU football team. A memorable season, to say the least, man.
And the best part is, we're not done yet.
We're not done. Exactly.
Still got two games left to make some memories, and I think they're going to do it in style.
I think so.
I love this team.
Yeah, it's great. Great stuff. So, all right. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharp, Matt Lucky, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKER. Thanks to ZB, Zach Bennett, for joining me, sophomore goalkeeper for the MSU men's soccer team. We'll remind you all that you can be a part of the Current Sports TV audience this Wednesday. That's right, tomorrow night, as I sit down with East Lansing boys basketball coach Steve Finnemore. The boys basketball high school season is right around the corner, and Steve is one of the best coaches in the area. You don't want to miss that. Be a part of the live audience by going to WKAR.org and signing up. It's totally free. Again, tomorrow night at WKAR TV Studios, we tape here on the campus of MSU. Don't want to miss that. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.